Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Grey Leopard Code with Gary Norris Gray. Gary will be coming to you each Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking sports live on GLC.
Selfishly, the bound are coming down. I'm not the only one that's been affected and resented. Every story is fun, and I'm a lucky one. 'Cause there are people worse off that have suffered enough. Haven't they suffered enough? But you can't get enough of shutting down systems for personal gain, fighting fires with liars and praying for rain. Do you get off on pain? We're not pawns in your game, Commander-in-Chief. Honestly, if I did the things you do, I couldn't sleep. Seriously, do you even know the truth? We're in a state of crisis. People are dying while you line your pockets deep. Commander-in-Chief, how does it feel to still be able to breathe? We're taught when we were young, if we fight for what's right, there won't be justice for just some. Won't give up, stand our ground. We'll be in the streets while you're bunkering down. Loud and proud, best believe, we'll still take a knee while you're Commander-in-Chief. Honestly, if I did the things you do, I couldn't sleep. Seriously, do you even bunkering down? Won't give up, stand our ground. We'll be in the streets for your Commander-in-Chief. Honestly, if I did the things you do, I couldn't sleep. Seriously, do you even know the truth? We're in a state of crisis. People are dying while you line your pockets deep. Commander-in-Chief, how does it feel?
Good afternoon, welcome to the Grey Leopard Code GLC. Commander-in-Chief. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, what I see this week, this month, this year, we are in serious trouble here, folks. We have a government that can't do anything right. Number one, we have four people in the Senate, two are Republicans, two are Democrats, need to be kicked out. Kicked out. You know who they are. You have seditionists. You have people are rebelling. Tuesday. Red states and blue states. Where did they get that from? Hello? The Confederacy is rising again. Are you ready? Are you ready? Because it's coming. Yeah, a ex-president. It should be in jail. In jail! They won't charge him. Because they got to tie the I's and cross the T's. How much more do you need? Right now, this is ridiculous. If it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, what is it? Time for action, folks. And this fool run for president, it's on you. In the Constitution. It states, if you are in anything connected to the sedition or revolution in the United States, you cannot run for office. Look it up, paragraph, section 14, paragraph 3. Read it. It's in the Constitution. If it is the Constitution, is that not law? And that's why I keep telling y'all, see y'all sleepwalking. I told you that the three fish boats need to be taken out of the Constitution because if Donald Trump get elected again? Guess what? The three votes, go right back up here again. Y'all think I'm joking? Just watch. This is what they do. And y'all think, okay, this is too serious. No, that's reality. Take it out of the Constitution. Take it out. Take a break.
BlackAthlete.com.
Now we got the spirit that can never give in, with a heart that pumps stronger than 10 average men. It's something within, I was born to win. You can't hold me down, I'm a black champion. We had to fight for equal rights, on and off the court, and at the turn of the century, dominated sports. For the love of the game, endured the pain, and fought through segregation, had to make a change. Jackie Robinson, first black man to get a deal, in the major league, knocking home runs out the field. Led the whole lead in RBIs and steals, in his first year, MVP rookie of the year, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays. And Minnie Minosa paved the way for Reggie Jackson, Ken Griffey, and Sammy Sosa. Half of all MVPs in the history of baseball's been black athletes. That's why we excel in all our feats, cause we so deep, mentally, physically, and spiritually. So all I wanna do is thank my God, we worked so hard, came so far, black athletes, superstar.
Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Light through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Light through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
Now, basketball is my favorite of all sports, cause there's so many black athletes that ever blessed the court. Will Chamberlain must be the most famous, scored 100 points in a game, and no one to do the same as Elgin Baylor, Bill Russell,
and Connie Hawkins. Who's the best to play the sport? Dr. J or Michael Jordan? Played above the rim when they scored. Hung in the air when they scored. Made moves like never before. So all my black athletes, entrepreneurs, you open up the doors. You deserve a round of applause. The pigskin, the gridiron, where bodies be colliding. And the men must be made of iron. Where would football be without the great Jim Brown? Austin Payton breaking tackles and running for touchdowns. So if you ever had to stop him, it'd be crushing. Because he still holds the records for the most yards rushing. Smooth with quick moves like dancers. Emmitt Smith, Tyrell Davis, and the great Barry Sanders. All I want to do is thank my God who worked so hard. Came so far, black athlete, superstar.
The eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
Jack Johnson, a heavyweight champion in 1910, fought the best of American men. And the fourth of the century took place on Independence Day, and the purse was 100 G's to pay. The most eagerly awaited event in American history, Jack Johnson versus Jim Jeffries. Nothing Frederick Douglass ever did, nothing Booker T ever did, shocked the world like this did. The great white hope came tumbling down, beaten and bruised and knocked out in the 15th round. Muhammad Ali, the greatest heavyweight champion of all time, at least he was in his mind. He gained the heavyweight championship a record 3 times and successfully defended it 19 times. The third youngest, the third oldest heavyweight champion. His career spanned the 7 presidents.
The eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory,
Charlie Stafford, the first black man to win the PGA, made it possible for Tiger Woods to play today. Althea Gibson, first black woman to win the Wimbledon. Arthur Ashe, Williams sisters, we loved them through all of their trials and tribulations. Bad times we faced it and overcame the situation. Jesse Owens won 4 gold medals in the 36 Olympics, breaking records in 3 different events. And all the black women began to dominate. In track and field, they was great in 1948. And a team full of black women won 6 medals and represented in the 52 Olympics. Thanks to William Rudolph and Elise Coachman, black women, athletes slash coachmen, Flo Jones and Jackie Joyner was terrific in track and field, the best black women that ever did it.
Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
Jerry Rice.
Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory.
BlackAthlete.com.
BlackAthlete.com. Yes, sir. Good day to all. The Black, the Better Man Network. Ambassador Bass, and Buddy Oba, Buffalo, New York. We cannot forget Reggie Howe from Virginia. And the Mystery Man from WCLM 1450. All right, news of the week. Nick Nurse is now the new Philadelphia Sixers head coach. DeVoe moved the second round of the U.S. French Open. The French Open, excuse me. On Monday, both teams agreed lost at home. The Vegas Knight Vortex and Speed killed $1,000 into early vacation. 6-0. My Miami Heat would get up by 26 points. Street Butler, 28 points. They got the Boston Celtics in a 103-84 victory. And it wasn't even close. On Monday, the Racing Authority took two downs. On Racing Integrity and Safety Authority, HISA, had a meeting about 12 deaths, one racing death, and a body closed, took them down, and won't race until the end of July. If they get to the bottom of this, we won't know. Zone Stevens moves on to second round to the Red Open, defeating Karina Pliskova in straight sets, but Sloane and Sinclair deal with racial issues in WTA. Now it's going to become more prevalent because Venus and Serena are not there to defend the fort. So Sloane, Madison Keys, we're going to have to step it up. On Tuesday, they said he was suspended by NASCAR for crashing into Danny Hamlin at Charlotte Motor Speedway. And NASCAR has got faster and faster. So these cars are going at over 200 miles an hour now. LA Galaxy football soccer team fired president Chris Klein in last place. Very bad season and a bad boycott. LA Galaxy took charge and fired the president. The head coach might be next because this team's not performing on the field. Maybe the Oakland fan base take note of what the LA Galaxy fan base did. They did not go to the game. I just got to take to get the A's on the right track, but I think the A's are already gone to Vegas. Bob Myers will be leaving the Golden State Warriors after four titles in 11 years. Bob Myers took the ragtag last place Golden State Warriors to four championships in 8 years, with a possibility of another one next year. Spencer Carberry will be the new head coach of the Washington Capitals hockey team. And the Capitals had a very bad year this year. They did not get to the playoffs. The first time in 9 years they did not go to the playoffs. So the Washington Capitol management said, we can't do this. Guess what? They will be getting a new voice at the top of the line. Thiago Wild upset Medvedev in the second round of the French Open. The French Open go wild with that clay court. Anything can happen with that clay court. Wednesday, here we go
For the U.S. Senate on
the GOP thing next year, so we're going to see what happens with that, too. Steve Garvey is a conservative man, so he's going to have a conservative values. California is tough on Republicans. We'll see what happens. Good luck to Steve Garvey. We'll take a break.
Wow! I feel good. I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got you. Oh, I feel nice. The sugar is fine. I feel nice. The sugar is fine.
Check on the baseball standings for the first time. the Yankees and Blue Jays right behind them, that's going to be a good race in the Denver October. AL Central, Minnesota Twins need the upstart, they need Detroit Tigers by 2 games. Minnesota Twins have ruled this division this year, but the Tigers are up and coming. AL West, in the Battle of Texas, with the Rangers and the Astros 2 games apart, Houston is the world champions. Texas is battling to get the playoffs again. NL East is Atlanta Braves and by the Marlins by 4 games. The Marlins, Phillies, Mets have to keep in contact with the Braves. The Braves can run away with the division. AL Central is the unknown Milwaukee Brewers. Lead the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Pittsburgh Pirates finally come back. 2 games behind the Brewers. In AL West, the Los Angeles Dodgers lead the Diamondbacks. The upstart Diamondbacks. The Dodgers have won the AL West for 10 straight years. Before the look over to New York, Mets. Mets are in presently in third place with a 30-28 record, tied with the Marlins. They Mets are very inconsistent. They have a strange lineup. I don't have any guys. Except for Sterling Marte, Brandon Nemo, and Ty Bomb. The outfield is very strong. Lindor has switched up. We'll see what happens to him. Beatty and Escobar go back and forth. Peter Lazo is a good first baseman. I want to see another go back to the 86 team and the great first baseman. Cardinal became a Met, one of the best first basemen we had in years. The question for the Mets is the bullpen. Who's going to take control of the bullpen? Is it going to be Hunter? Is it going to be Smith? Riley? It's very inconsistent. And the bullpen, I keep telling people this, the bullpen is your key. The Giants learned that this week, last 2 weeks. A bullpen can pull you out of stuff, okay? The Mets gotta get a bullpen. The Yankees, on the other hand, they have work to do too. They're in third place. Abreu as a reliever. Their starting rotation needs to be shored up. Coles and North and Cortez are only two strong pitchers they have. Aaron Judge is carrying the team. So, and he can't do it by himself. So, they gotta do something. And that's the update for the Yankees and the Mets. All right, we gotta go to the house. Oh, seven in the house.
Yeah, Gary, with continuing your New York theme here, the Belmont Stakes is next Saturday. That's the third leg of the Triple Crown. Of course, there will not be a Triple Crown winner this year because different horses have won the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness Stakes. This is the 50th year anniversary of Secretariat winning the Triple Crown, winning all three races, and in the Belmont winning by 31 lengths, which is an incredible accomplishment. To look at the photograph of that victory from the stands, Secretariat's in one time zone and everybody else is in another time zone. But the news hook this week is the controversy of horse deaths at Churchill Downs in Kentucky, the home of the Kentucky Derby, which is kind of the cathedral of horse racing, if you will. It may be, you know, the Yankee Stadium or the Lambeau Field of horse racing. And in 7 weeks, 12 horses have died. And a number went down, half a dozen or so went down in the week before the Derby. In fact, now Churchill Downs has suspended all racing in Churchill Downs. They're moving to another track to investigate what may be going on in Churchill Downs. But the real issue was reported also this week that they instituted some new rules that horses, the real problem is they're putting out, this isn't the whole problem because horses go down. There are some horses that are in seemingly good shape and still go down, young horses. But they're putting out horses that are overworked, overstressed, not competitive, and the pay structure was that any horse that ran would get something. The theory being that that would help fill the field of horses and entice the betting fan to come and maybe bet the long shot. But you're basically filling up the race cards with horses that should not be out there. And there was one that died. Kimberly Dream was a 7-year-old mare, which is a female breeding horse, so it would have had the wear and tear of having given birth, making her 61st start in a $40,000 claiming race, and that's cheap for horses, that had only 5 starters in it. So it means that they were trying to pull horses in just to fill the card. She had not been competitive in her 5 most recent starts, losing by margins of 19 to 33 lengths, which is an eternity. You and I could run that race and do better than 19 to 33 lengths. Not really, but you get my point. That horse was not even competitive, but it would get some money just to run. Under the new rules, and these are supposedly the new rules, so Kimberly Dream broke down in the upper stretch and was taken off and euthanized. But under the new rules, this is supposedly the progressive rules to save the game. If a horse is beaten by more than 12 lengths in 5 consecutive starts, it will be unable to race until the medical director clears it for a return to racing. But if the horse, say, still loses, if it lost, say, by 10 lengths in 10 races consecutively, never finished in the money, was always 10 lengths out, it would still be able to race under these so-called more compassionate rules. It's still a travesty. And then they've also changed the rule that they've cut back only the one through five horses would get money. It used to be, you know, it was like going to a kid's birthday party. You know, just so you don't feel bad, it's one kid's birthday party, but everybody shows up and gets a present, just so you don't have somebody crying in the corner that they didn't get a present on somebody else's birthday. But this is a travesty. I mean, there was a movie in the 70s called They Shoot Horses, Don't They? And yeah, they do. The point being that when these nags are broken down, you know, they get sent to the slaughterhouse. But not yet. They're running them out on the track.
Horse racing, like boxing, needs to be held. My meaning is this. There is no competitive banter for horse racing. I never understood horse racing. Never liked horse racing. Secretary was the only thing that got me into horse racing. And that's the problem. Same with boxing. Boxing is a destructive sport. Destructive. In my opinion, horse racing is a destructive sport. What are you doing running around a track with somebody on top of you? What is the goal of this?
You need the jockey to guide the horse. Otherwise, you put the horse out there, it just may run around and start, you know, eating daisies along the track or something.
What I'm saying is, what competition is this? Why are you doing this? Because it does not make sense.
Well, it goes back
all the way back to the Roman Empire, and how far it goes back.
Well, yeah, true. And probably before that, I mean, well, Genghis Khan, the Mongol Empire, you know, followed the Roman Empire. But, you know, it's like anything else. You know, you got a horse and, you know, My horse, my dog can run faster than your dog.
And the old Wild Wild West, folks, you know, that's where this came from again.
Right.
The horse racing was not in America until the Wild Wild West came out.
Well, a lot of these horses, you know, the leg bones, I mean, you look at a racehorse, they're graceful, beautiful creatures, you know, but, you know, a rather massive upper body on
the
these
bony,
thin legs. Yeah. I mean, you saw that even in baseball with all his, you know, PED, upper body development, Mark McGwire's ankles and his feet were the breakdown of his career. He was always on the IR because you can't change your bone structure. You can do all you want with your supporting muscles and ligaments, but they can only do so much. And if you're, you know, building all this upper body mass and the torque, it puts inordinate pressure on the lower body, and that's what we're seeing in horse racing.
Let me ask you a question. What is the purpose of horse racing?
Well, it's like any sport. I mean, what's the purpose of, you know, walking, you know, over hill and dale and putting a little round ball in 18 holes? What's that about? It's like anything. You know, what's the point of somebody throwing a round object at you and you trying to hit it with a stick? Baseball. What's that about? It's like any sport. It's like, you know, let's go do something and see who wins.
Well, I called for a ban on boxing years ago. I am now going for a ban on racing.
Yeah. Well, even the industry itself, for them to shut down Churchill Downs, I mean, I was thinking today the analogy would be, imagine if you had 12 baseball players dropping dead in 7 weeks in Yankee Stadium.
It would happen because that happened. The media and American public would go berserk. And the other thing, with horse racing and boxing, nobody cares.
Right. No, that's the thing with boxing, too. I mean, you get these pugs who are willing to fight for, you know, just to get on the card.
I was thinking about this morning, about organizing and boxing.
Right.
How similar the fan base is. It's a very small fan base. It is very small.
Right. No. Well, you know, out in El Cerrito, California, Albany, California, near where you live, there's Golden Gate Fields, right alongside the freeway, outside of Berkeley, leading to San Francisco, right on San Francisco Bay, a huge piece of property for a racetrack that I think is only open on the weekends. And, you know, even out where I live, Sonoma County, the county fair has racing, and people used to look at that as a summer attraction. They couldn't get horses last year to fill up the card. I mean, the interest level has just dropped out.
I think it's a dying sport.
Yeah.
And I think it's dying because the horses are dying.
Yeah. Well, for Churchill Downs to close, again, it's like it would be like closing, you know, Yankee Stadium. I've got to go back to this analogy, you know, if there was, you know, some virus or something, they thought, you know, and I guess that's what they're doing in Churchill Downs is they're looking at the track. The track isn't the problem, I don't think. It's the condition of the horses that are running on that track.
But also, I mean, it's the way that the sport is being run. You have Des and Anita. You have five Des and Anita. You have three Des up here at Albany. You have 150. I start looking this up. You have 150 Des in the West Coast alone. You can't keep doing that.
Right. Right. No, it's shocking. It's shocking. And when it all happens right in public, when it happens right on the track, on the field. I mean, you're watching the players, the horses, die right on the track. I mean, it exposes the jockeys to risk. There was one horse running recently, I think last week or so at Churchill Downs, was running ahead.
Yep.
And it just broke down, dropped its jockey. And sometimes their legs literally blow up. It's like a Joe Theismann compound fracture of the leg.
Now, think about this. '07. Think about this. Last year, during the Buffalo Bills game, last year, I made a tackle. Yeah, a heart attack on the beat.
Right.
What happened to NFL that week? Everybody's mama knew about the event. That's why I say that you would never see that happen in baseball or football. If one guy dies, or two guys die, it's going to be a national scandal.
Right.
Again, it's a philosophy of the sport. The philosophy of horse racing. The philosophy of boxing has to change. Until that changes, we're going to continue to have these problems. Horse racing should be either cut down or eliminated. Either one or the other. Because to me, it's serving no purpose at all. That's my opinion, but
seeing there too, same thing. With modern science, training, feeding, conditioning, people are bigger, faster. But when you get hit in a critical way by that bigger, faster opposing player, when you're just standing there, even if you're as big as you are, standing there catching the ball or running with the ball and someone else hits you at a critical point in your sternum, interrupting your heart, you can do as much cardio fitness as you want, but when you get hit with that impact, it's going to interrupt everything. And we see that same thing with the concussions.
But the NFL takes immediate action. Why? Because people all over the country saw it. Because people around the world saw it. That's why they had immediate action.
But Gary, let's look back. What action did they actually take?
But wait, this has been going on with the horse racing, and we go on for years, and nobody cares.
Right.
That's my problem.
Yeah, no, but even again, with football, there was an increased awareness. But other than everybody having seen it, the game didn't change after that fellow had a heart attack. The game went on.
It changed. I bet you, every coach was giving a memo. You do X, Y, and Z. That's what you're doing now.
No, but in the heat of the moment, there was nothing illegal about that hit. It was just, how he got hit and when he got hit. It was a clean hit.
But the impact.
Right, but nobody's going to send a memo, slow down, That's not the way the game is being played. As you yourself say, you play to the win the game. You see the opposing player, you're gonna take him down.
No,
I mean, it goes back to Jack Tatum.
What I'm saying is this, is when you have good cousins, with NFL know about good cousins for years, okay, now we got to change the game.
Right.
We're going to put extra padding in the helmet, we're going to have bigger helmets, we're going to have precautionary stuff
right.
on the field. You don't
right.
see that one crazy.
Right.
There's no eating except for this one, this year. This is the first time that the what's it called?
The Racing Commission, yeah, Churchill Downs.
HISA, the first time HISA is eating at all. And they had the difference. If somebody goes down football, they're immediately around the league.
Right.
That is a big difference.
That's true. Even with all these deaths, it's kind of like, you know, the sports pages have kind of covered it, but there's no real big outcry. It's just kind of a...
I had to read on page 7.
Right.
What are you doing?
Right.
We got Dr. Evil in the house with Delaware.
Good afternoon. I'm listening to you two juggle football and horse racing, and it's a good next question. What's going to happen when Hamlin makes his next hit, whether he does it on the practice field, the real field, whatever, the next hit is going to be the hit, because how he handles it will say everything that you need to say. Now that
Michael,
could have been...
Let me ask you a question. All right. Okay. You have horses going down. That's right. All over the country, they're going down all over the country, right?
Yeah.
The commission, what's it called?
The
Jockey Club. Oh, the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority, right?
Yeah.
And they have done nothing the past 50 years. And now, with the 12 horses go down and turn them down, and only because the reporter reported it, they do anything.
Well, and it's not some...
Football, Gary,
that's not totally true. You got to remember, it was years ago, horses first started dying at Santa Anita. And Jerry Hollendorfer, who was a big fan of them, was being indicted for that because there was either something in his methodology or whatever it was, the drugs or injured horses or whatever, that allowed them to catch everything and point it in his direction and say, he's the focus of where we got to stop. Now, they're going to stop racing at Churchill Downs. That's something that hasn't happened in years. And this Triple Crown has probably seen more tragedies over the last few weeks than they have in the last few years. Now, they had 13 horses. King's March immediately opted out. So you got 12 horses for the Belmont next Saturday. But you got to remember, it's a war of attrition. These horses are being made in the ultimate gamble. Trainers are only allowed to make a good horse better. And they do what they have to do in improving a horse's ability. Sometimes there's nothing you can do, but there are so many pick shortcuts, and they leave them in situations where horses are left in very vulnerable situations. Bones are put where they are most fragile, and even the slightest of acting the wrong way can kill a horse. And there's nothing you can do about that. And everybody in the jockey club knows about it.
I made a real good point about the leg. It's bloody right in the middle of the tiny leg. It's bloody. And I saw a replay. Like, oh, my God. I could not believe I was seeing. I mean, the leg is totally bloody right in the middle of the track.
Well, that's it. That's what I said. That's like, you know, the famous... Joe Theismann, compound fracture of his leg a number of years ago. Again, compound fractures are the bone protrudes outside the skin. And as we were saying earlier, you know, you've got these horses developed with massive upper body strength, supporting all that on very fragile leg bones and ankles. One point, Michael, I don't know if you were here when I mentioned this point earlier, but Churchill Downs, of course, has been closed, and they're investigating the condition of the track itself. But there was also an earlier report this week in the New York Times about how these horses were being run out there. There was one horse, Kimberly Dream, a 7-year-old mare, was making her 61st start. She had not been competitive in her 5 most recent starts, losing by margins of 19 to 33 lengths. And they've come up with a reform, a supposed reform, that says, well, if a horse is beaten by more than 12 lengths in 5 consecutive starts, then it's ineligible to race. But even with that reform, a horse could lose by 10 lengths in 5 consecutive starts, which means that horse is not at all competitive, but still be allowed to run.
Right.
And apparently they're doing this in order trying to fill the card. They just, you know, to get horses out there, even if they're not at all competitive, just so that you've got a card of horses. The race that Kimberly Dream died in, there were only 5 horses in that race. So, you know, on the one hand, they had to struggle to fill the card. On the other hand, the betting public goes, oh, there's only 5 horses. That means I've got, you know, what, a 1 in 5 chance of winning or better. So it draws the betting public, you know, as opposed to, say, 12 horses, you know, where the long shot's got a ghost of a chance. Here, you know, even some broken down nag could break through in the mind of the betting public when he sees 5 horses. He goes, oh, man, I got a chance here. But not really, because that horse is a dog.
Two things you have to pick apart from that. Kimberly Dawn was 7 years old. So she had been alive for a good time, and she must have had a decent amount of races in between. So nothing wrong there. Unfortunately for her, she ran because a trainer... And it doesn't matter whether it's a famous trainer or somebody who's just hanging on. Like you said, sometimes they have to fill a card. And you can't get more than 5 horses in a field for a race. That's a bad race. Because every position will win money. But if you win 5th place money, it's barely enough to pay for a fee for the horse, and it goes to a different pool. They are going to run this with Churchill until they get to the bottom of this, because the timing was pitiful. You're in the middle of the Triple Crown. Now, they don't have a Triple Crown potential winner, but they were able to get over 10 horses for the final race. Usually by the time they get to the Belmont, They've decided who's going to win, or not who's going to win, but how many have an actual shot, and the fields are smaller. So the Belmont started with 13. They got 12 down with King's March scratching. And unfortunately, what's happening in Churchill Downs may happen at another track. It's just that Churchill has a name to go with it. And even though Santa Anita had been around a long time, nobody made a big fuss over it, because the first Sunday or first Saturday in May is dedicated to Churchill Downs being a location and connecting directly with the sport.
Michael, the first race has more than 12 horses. Do you think next year they will cut that down?
No, what I'm saying is that you got 12 horses for the Belmont this year. There are X number of horses every year that run on a point system. There are different races across the country in different locations, Oaklawn, in Florida, in Kentucky, in Arkansas, where certain levels of races are run. You get points for how you place in these races. The ones who are the top point getters, who may also be the top money getters, are eligible to get picked for the Derby. And because of the finite number of spots, you can only put in 20 horses. After that, it becomes a smaller field because the Preakness has only 13 gates at Pimlico, and they're traditionally smaller fields anyway, but by attrition, usually a horse that didn't win in the Derby, well, they opt out. In the Belmont, it's a bigger field, but it's a longer distance. The Jockey Club designed this with the premise that we have to do different things in order to get different results. Now, in Canada, they have a Triple Crown as well. In Canada, the Triple Crown has grass, dirt, and artificial turf. That's how they do their three races. And if you have a horse that can negotiate all three of those, you have a Triple Crown champion. I don't think there's been one since with approval in the late 90s, actually. But they won't crack down on the sport until they can catch somebody and personalize you as the perpetrator. Right. Just like they did with Baffert and made him sit for a couple of years, they got to find a guy.
You know what's interesting about the Belmont? It's the longest of the three, so it's the ultimate test. It's like, okay, maybe you won the Derby, maybe you won the Preakness, but can you sustain that through what I believe is the mile and a half course?
In
the Belmont. So, which makes Secretariat's win all the greater that over the longest course. In his Triple Crown, he won by 31 lengths. He had no trouble going a mile and a half.
My sister Jenny said the fact that he had an enlarged heart, and she's the bloodline specialist. She's done all that work. She knows what it took for her to do, what it took for Secretariat to get the job done in the Belmont. That was a horse racing feat because he's done things that no horse, whether he's a sprinter or a long-distance runner or whatever, has ever done in those series of races. And he lived long enough to not just tell the tale, but live out his life afterwards and live happily after with the oats and apples and carrots and whatever. And unfortunately... unfortunately, Churchill doesn't want any negative publicity because there's a fight for the town, sports-wise as it is. They got the first Saturday in May because it's so old, the event itself. But it's even worse. If they don't get what they're supposed to get in terms of somebody paying attention, that makes this situation even harder. Because unfortunately, the Triple Crown is not on horse racing's menu in terms of an event anymore. Once somebody finishes at the Derby, when they run the Preakness, it's a separate situation altogether. When they win two races in a row, then you got something to talk about, and Belmont has more significance.
And the Belmont track is a very, very bad track now. As I was talking to Reggie, and Reggie said that they need to rebuild the whole grandstand. It's going apart.
Well, look, Belmont is a different track. I'll say that. But it's a longer track. Belmont is designed for turf and dirt. Pimlico may not be so much as it's at least a mile track, but it's not a mile and a half track. And most of the tracks in Europe are mile and a half tracks, which is why the grass horses do so well. But that back stretch is the difference in Belmont. You have about 1,200 feet once those horses hit that turn where they got to put on the horsepower and gut it. And you're talking about 40, 45 miles an hour. If a horse shatters a bone, that's it. My mind makes me think of Charismatic, who was a horse who ran in the Triple Crown, had won two of the three races, and Chris Antley was a hot jockey, and he was aboard Charismatic. Charismatic got near the end, but shattered a cannonball. And Antley immediately jumped off the horse and tried to guide the horse past the finish line in an effort to save the horse's leg. Unfortunately, the horse didn't make it, but it was an amazing feat in terms of athleticism, because the jockeys really are great pound-for-pound athletes, and he did everything he could to save the horse's life. Unfortunately, it was too short, and Charismatic passed, had to be put down.
We got Tony in the middle. What's up, Tony?
Hey, guys. Now, Mike, would it be safe to say that the Breeders' Cup as a whole is probably bigger than has become bigger than any Triple Crown?
Well, that's the point. The Breeders' Cup grabbed the niche because of the Triple Crown. They wanted to develop a series where horse racing could profit, frankly. And this two-day event that features races of different distances with horses of different ages on different surfaces had turned out to be a boom. There were good ones. There were really good ones where horses got showcased. There were not so good ones where the track was not big enough, like the year that they had the Breeders' Cup at Melmoth. Melmoth was not a big enough track to support a large field. And on top of that, it rained, and the drainage wasn't as sufficient as it could have been. But the Breeders' Cup picked out that part of August, or not August, October, before Thanksgiving as their time, and that weekend has turned out to be more or less profitable. But still, you haven't had a major league tragedy the likes of what we're seeing at Santa Anita or Churchill with horses just dropping like flies.
You know, one interesting thing about the Triple Crown, all three of those races, it's run by 3-year-old horses. And as was discussed on the show a few weeks back, those horses are really just still teenagers. They're not physically mature. Where the Breeders' Cup will introduce horses that have reached their maturity. So you could have a 4-year-old, a 6-year-old, which is more in line with an adult horse. So you've got horses that have reached their maturity. On the other hand, some of the horses, like Secretariat, are going to get pulled out early and retired for their breeding services. So their racing career will end. I think Secretariat just had a very few races after the Triple Crown. And then it was retired for breeding because there's so much money available in the breeding. You can't risk the horse going down in one of these races.
Well, they did all that, but you got to remember the horses and the people who run them are greedy. Once a horse is trained to win, it likes to run. It's used to winning. It wants to run. But when a trainer gets you, say, at 2 years old, and you got that in you, they're going to keep doing that. Although there are some who think, let's not take a chance. Let's save him, wait till he's 3, and then we'll syndicate him and put him to stud. Now, the year that they had the backup and hold up, and they waited about 6 months and they ran the Triple Crown a little late that year, turned out to be beneficial for most of the horses. That extra half year allowed the horses to gain weight, allowed them to firm up, and I don't know if there were better results from the horses, but there were surely fewer accidents. And if the horses ran at 4, I can't see where it would be that damaging. You know, they shouldn't have to wait until, or they shouldn't be held back at 3 years old running, or even 2 years old running juvenile races. The only reason they run juvenile races now is so that they didn't make money off of them at the Breeders' Cup, unfortunately.
It all comes back to that. Because, like, now Secretariat has sired, what, 5, 6 other Kentucky Derby winners, something like that?
At least 6 other Kentucky Derby winners, and females he's sired 2 champions, one undefeated in Lady's Secret, and the other one, shit, I can't remember, although Jenny probably wouldn't know for sure. She's doing the family thing in Nova Scotia. But right now, horse racing does not like the timing of it all. They don't want to be looked at like this because the people from the so-called humanitarian organizations like PETA, those hypocrites, paying attention, waiting for the next shoe to drop. And they'll come out and they'll say something. But they only do it when the camera points in that direction, not the event itself. They're a bunch of attention whores. And that's why I don't like PETA. PETA had a chance to say and do even more with Greyhounds, and they didn't do that. And when they were going after Mike Vick with the dogs, people forget that the Rooneys own dog racing tracks. And nobody said shit about the fact that they were running Greyhounds and that dozens of Greyhounds, after they were no longer useful, were let go and they were turned into puppy chow. Or they were literally just put in dumpsters, dead.
Yeah, that's a double standard again.
Okay, again, sad thing is it comes back to the money. It's easier for them to go after Vic and make an example of him. And if I remember correctly, the Rooneys aren't the only NFL owners that own Greyhounds. They're the most prominent because I think they own horse races. They own race horses and Greyhounds. I'm sure if you looked at all the four major sports, you would see some of the other things that these folks are involved in, and Peter is literally the Karens of the humanitarian of the quote unquote animal rights group.
Unfortunately,
it beat his butt because what they did, Michael Vick was inexcusable.
Well, they piled on.
Wasn't even there when the crime was committed.
They piled on like a lot of folks did during that whole thing. Again, it's unfortunately that's where we are in society now, in a sense where if you can beat somebody up through the media, you're gonna try to take advantage of it. Vic was made a convenient target. Remember, his family was involved in this. He was the face of it, but his family pretty much put his black ass in jail by their actions in the dog ring. And he had no choice but to come out and say, yeah, you got me. Nobody was happy.
It was a player. And either the Warriors or New York, I can't forget which one. But he admitted that he was by the dog ring. Nothing happened to him.
They made an example.
I mean, number one, and I said this from day one, I never thought that he was the quote unquote kingpin. The story that I always heard, and most importantly, Marcus Vick, his brother, but there were other quote unquote friends or hangers on that were involved. And all of them apparently, I guess Virginia has that like three strike thing, and these guys were at their third strike, and they said, you want to bypass, third strike, rat out somebody, and they ratted out Vic, and I don't know if they ever got convicted again, but let's put it this way, they weren't. They did the third strike. I don't think they got the quote unquote third strike, so to speak. But
no, they didn't. It's like you said about 911. Somebody dialed 911 and was ready to hit the other one if they did not catch Vic. And they did. And on the back end of that, what made it worse was that Vic did his time. And Vic was able to emerge on top because he came, Philly took a chance on him. He ended up as somebody who was all league or should have been all league, but the sports writers supposedly trying to punish him didn't put him on the team with Brady, cocksucker. But
let me ask you guys a question. When the American media which is majority 50-year-old white men. And these guys have played one minute of any game in their lives. When they go after a player, like me, always is number one player. Let me give you an example. If I had to make, he was number one in payroll, right? If I had to, Serena Williams number one in tennis. They went after Tiger Woods, number one in golf. I mean, what is it? I mean, after a while, people need to do better here.
Well, but that's the nature of media. I mean, we build people up and then we tear them down. We build them up in order to tear them down.
But they do not do this.
Yes, they do.
Caucasian players.
Well, no, they don't. I would agree there, but you know what Art said has merit to it. Journalism has changed from what players were about in the 50s and 60s. They've made it clear that there are a bunch of them. You know, they are so-called supposed guardians of the game, and they're to make the game look good. And they'll profit from the game, maybe by writing books, maybe by other ways. But the whole point is, don't say anything bad about the game. And unfortunately, too many of these guys are white and arrogant and dumb. And those combinations are lethal for black athletes. And now because of what we have here, we have somebody who will piss on someone in a heartbeat. They'll watch an event and, well, let me put it this way. Think about your writer sitting in the Boston Garden. Boston's come back from 3-0 to tie the series.
Oh, don't get me started.
And everything is about if they win, you know, Celtic pride, the Celtic mystique, whatever you want to call it, is in full effect. But Miami didn't hear that. The other side of this, Miami didn't get the memo, and they were kicking their ass. There were so many guys who had written their copy before the game even started, and they were just waiting to add the paragraph or two when they finished. Journalism has changed significantly, I think Tony and Art would agree, over the last decade at least. The nature of the beast now is to tear down as opposed to build up. You know, if Tiger Woods had been, say, the 75th ranked golfer instead of number one, nobody would have gave a fuck about the fact that he was fucking around. You know, the kicker from the Giants was beating the shit out of his girlfriend / wife, and nobody said boo. You know, LeBron James wears a menacing mask, and all of a sudden, oh, my God, take the mask off. You look evil. You look menacing. You're going to hurt my white friends. Hell no. That's the kind of mentality we're dealing with, Gene.
Mm-hmm. Michael, I want to ask you something. You know, we're all, on the, depending on how you look at it, the long side or perhaps the short side of 50. And as Gary said, historically, you know, your senior sports writer have been white men over 50, because maybe it takes 30 years, you know, to get your career going and, you know, be in some position of so-called authority. I'm sure you saw that with the Gannett chain and other enterprises. But one thing I've noticed now, and of course I'm older, you see the ascendancy of younger sports writers, guys who are in their mid-20s, maybe early 30s, who are commenting. And I think that's a phenomenon, Michael. I think you and I can both identify from our own career track that, you know, we did not have that kind of success, perhaps, or access in our youngest years. Am I seeing this correctly? Do you have an observation?
Yeah, we didn't have that access, but we also didn't have the fact that sports writers would become personalities. And this is what Tony says that is so, it's so on point. You know, you become bigger than the story, or you make yourself the story, and you got nothing to do with what the hell happened at the event. And that's where it becomes a problem.
Nobody knew who to get married with what. It's actually Derek Benjamin, LeBron James. He refused to call him the King. He called him Prince James. He became a star. Nobody knew who to get married with what. The same thing with Jim Rome, L.A. Jim Rome. Nobody knew who Jim Rome was until Chris, the guy with the LA Reds, kicked his butt.
Jim Abbott, Gary, it's the antagonistic nature. They would not be able to do what they did if their papers or whoever their bosses are did not allow them or give them license to do it. And that's where it becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a sense, it's never really changed to a certain extent. It's, you know, and the difference, you know, I always fall back on the, even though it's fictional, but to a certain extent, it does, the Robert Duvall character in The Natural.
Exactly.
That mentality has always been there, whether it was a Bill Conlon or a Dick Young or a Jim Murray or what have you. Over the years, there's always been that sort of gatekeeper, mentality, so to speak. You know, now that you have the internet, now that you have this 24/7, 365 frenzy, there's more of that out there in the sense of because you've got to fill that time because there's only so much of it that you can talk about. And it's interesting that Gary brought up Bayless because Dennis Sharp basically bought out his own contract earlier this week. And to be honest with you, I'm surprised it took him really this long to and see, in many ways, Shannon Sharp is sort of where the difference is now in the sense where now we've always had ex-players be either play-by-play or commentary or what have you. But now, because of the emphasis of media and because of the difference, you know, throw in the internet, throw in 24/7, 365, and what have you. A lot of these guys who are quote unquote prominent now would not be prominent. Because see, here's the thing with Skip Bayless. Skip Bayless was basically the Dallas Cowboy beat writer for the Dallas Morning News.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a couple of books back in the day on Tom Landry, on the history of whatever. And his thing, I mean, basically he was sort of Dick Young. He He was sort of like the Southwest version of Dick Young, in a sense, you know. And he could do his dirt, so to speak, regionally. But then when you get this creed, because like another guy I always do is like Paul Feinstein, the guy, you know, the guy for ESPN and the SEC network. Paul Feinbaum, I'm sorry, 505, I think I said his name wrong, but Paul Feinbaum, again, was sort of a regional sort of guy, more so in the South than whatever. But again, when you add the element of the national media and what have you, then guys like that become prominent. Jim Rome's another perfect example. Jim Rome was, I think, based in Cali. Most of his, because of the 24/7 feeding frenzy or what have you, he quote unquote becomes national, so to speak. And now there are pluses and minuses. Now, the good thing about the 24/7 365 is that, you know, we're in the consciousness, if you're a fan, there is that feeding frenzy. But and it goes back to what I've always talked about, in a sense, where now you don't have journalists anymore. You have personalities. And I know, and I think I can speak for all of us here, is that, call me a personality, to me, that's like spitting in my face. Now, you call me a journalist. I'm a journalist. I will always consider myself a journalist. Now, in a lot of instances now, you have personalities because they literally don't, like, let's put it this way. I'm willing to bet you it's been over 15, 20 years since Skip Bayless has had the nerve to go into a locker room, because if he, you know, to do what he does and he tries to go into a locker room, the man would have been killed years ago or would have had at least a couple of instances. But see, he can be cowardly and do what he does. And again, it goes back to, and I hate to bring them up, but it has, but you know, there's no way around it. You know, it was the four-letter network, because where they always cover themselves is when you pin them up against the wall, oh, we're not sports, we're entertainment. Yep. And then when you hold them out for that, oh, no, we're not entertainment, we're sports. And yes, you know, everybody knows ESPN, the sports, the entertainment sports program. But see, again, in a sense, that's cowardly. Because, look, I get it. You know, there is there's an entertainment factor, of course. But, and maybe I'm naive when I say this, I'm thinking that if you're a sports fan, so to speak, you don't necessarily get caught up in the entertainment. Now, see, there's the difference now, I think, Art, than back in the day. Because now you have a generation of sports fans, older and younger, who don't watch sports and don't follow sports because of sports. There's all sorts of perfunctory, there's the fantasy football angle. There's the betting angle, which has now been raised, which may now push sports broadcasting and whatever, to a point where we may never, ever get back to the quote-unquote salad days of when it was something, you know, it was something to pick up a sporting news or to pick up your daily newspaper and see, you know, the box scores, to see the league leaders, so to speak. I use baseball as an example. Now, the great thing about baseball now is that if you're into it enough and what have you, you can basically watch every team every night 24/7, 365. And oh, by the way, there's the box. You still have the daily box scores. You still have people that pore over, like, you know, Sunday. The Sunday paper was always a staple because you'd always have the league leaders in.
That's right.
On the Sunday paper. You would get up for the Sunday paper because, you know, I mean, you sort of would know who was the top hitters or whatever, but because you had that Sunday paper, it would always have all the league averages, who's the top hitters, who's the top pitchers, and all that.
Yeah.
Now, good, bad, or indifferent, it's a daily thing, and you're almost inundated by it to a certain extent. And sadly now, there are a lot of instances where they don't even talk of X's and O's or strategy or whatever now. It's more about, you know, what Bayless said, what Rome said, whatever. And to me, therein lies the thing, because I'm not watching sports to see what these – I could, you know
– thank you.
Literally and figuratively don't give a damn what they think or what they say a lot of times, because we know that they're there to inflame, they're there to, you know, it's more, you know, we always get on the athletes that quote-unquote do the quote-unquote look at me, but you've got just as many quote-unquote – media personalities that do the same thing, and even
I think Tony hit it right on the head. And you know, to deal with Art's point, the whole issue is it doesn't matter whether you're in your 20s or your 50s. If you don't know your subject matter, you're fucked. You got no business putting your shit out there. And to make it even worse, you insult yourself by giving everybody the impression that you know what you're talking about. And you know you don't know what you're talking about. It makes yourself and the sport look bad.
Yeah. Let me throw another perspective here. In some ways, it has opened up opportunities for younger people. I mean, I see, and particularly younger black women who I see as the kind of on the anchor desk for halftime shows. They may be sideline reporters. They're young, they're attractive, they're knowledgeable. You know, they're because I often wonder, well, God, who is this person? How did they get that job so fast? Well, you look and they went to a good school. There was a sideline and halftime reporter for the Warriors who had graduated from Stanford. She had done well academically. She was maybe on a sports team, maybe not good enough to go to the WNBA, but, you know, she knew her sport. She was intelligent. She was attractive. And she was young. And she got that opportunity. So in some ways, you know, I mean, and I thought myself at the age of 22, I got out of college. Hey, I'm ready to go. And, you know, the old graybeard said, well, you know, calm down and sit on the side here for, you know, a few years, young man. And I was not, you know, ready to hear that. But in some ways, you know, these younger people who are not stupid, and I'm going to, you know, take Skip Bayless out of that category. But we see people who are anchoring the halftime desk, engaging in conversations knowledgeably, you know, handling the conversations between a Shaq and a Barkley and having their own thing to say. So in some ways, this 24/7 has opened up opportunities.
Oh, absolutely. I don't, you know, there's a balance. And one of the perfect examples to that for me is Maria Taylor, who, you know, ex-athlete. You know, she's got the model looks and all that. She knows her stuff, and, you know, of course, she's played the game. But even with her success, even she was scrutinized. And ironically, she's scrutinized by one of her own kind,
Rachel Nichols, who basically was sort of, you know, given everything by hands and fists and what have you because of her relationship with her mom. Diane Sawyer, I believe. It's either her mother or mother-in-law or what have you. But she basically was basically given everything on a silver platter, but meanwhile Maria literally and figuratively worked her way up the ladder, and she was ridiculed because of it. Now, and for, you know, that's the other side, because Lord knows, and I think we've all dealt with folks who had penis envy, and penis envy is not a male thing; it's a male and female thing, because it's more about just of hating on somebody for whatever reason. But yeah, it's, you know, and let me just qualify what I said. There are a lot of great young reporters out there, black, white, and what have you, that can do their thing. It gives us all hope. Look, all of us, you know, swell with pride with what Travis Singleton has been able to do, because he's to coin old Bugs Bunny phrase, he's one of our boys. And it's a sort of thing where there's probably more Travis Singletons than there are Skip Bayless, and thank God for that. And I know we can paint an ugly picture at times, and you know it's what. But that being said, I just wish that the Maria Taylors, the Travis Singletons, the others were to really get more of their due. You know, we have all carved out a nice little niche here over the years, and we still have, you know, there's still more work to do, fighting the good fight, so to speak. But I think even in our, you know, exasperation at times, we do know that there are some other fights, there are some other folks out there fighting the good fight. It's unfortunate that they don't get the same kind of, it's unfortunate, but it's part of, I guess, society, so to speak, where, you know, the loudest and the most obnoxious get more publicity than the ones that are actually doing it. It's just like the games in and of themselves. The workman type guys, the foot soldiers don't get the same kind of love that the offensive linemen don't get the same sort of love as, say, the wide receivers.
No, you're right. David Aldridge is a perfect example of what you're talking about. There are very, very, very few writers who know what they're talking about and know their subject matter better than David Aldridge. Aldridge comes in, he provides the information, and there you go. But it's like they almost have to grudgingly admit that David is good at what he does, because he's there. If David wasn't there, they wouldn't give a rat's ass. You got to know your subject matter. I can't stress that enough.
Exactly.
I go back to when LeBron was early LeBron, and he was being chided, and Bayless called him Prince James and all that bullshit. After the decision, and he won his first title, he said, "There's three motherfuckers I will never speak to again." Now, we know one has to be Stephen A, because I've never seen them interviewed together. The other has to be Bayless, for the obvious reasons. And even though I believe Tony might have it right with Jason Hammock, I don't know who the third person is. I thought it was Windhorse, the Windbag, the kid that rode his tail.
Brian, yeah, I know who you're talking about. Brian, yeah. Windhorse. Yeah.
Right.
He may be in there too. He may be in there too because now he was, you know, he had sort of the Pedro Gomez effect. Now Pedro Gomez, who wrote for the Arizona Republic for many years, and then became a TV guy, and basically, you know, during the whole Barry Bonds phenomenon, you know, uh-huh. Pedro Gomez was pretty much all over the place, and the thing about LeBron is that there's a gang of folks who basically came out of obscurity. Because of LeBron, it's sort of like, and hear me out when I say this, it's sort of like the O.J. Simpson trial effect in a sense, and the reason why I say that, other than Johnny Cochran, who I knew of years ago because of his association with Geronimo Pratt, who the hell ever heard of Lance Ito or Christopher Darden? Or any of the Kardashians, he spawned a whole industry to a certain extent. You know, Court TV was something that was somewhat prominent, but as you think of Court TV. You think of Court TV pre-OJ, and then you think of Court TV, which is now True TV, by the way, afterwards, and it just shows you. And in a sense, with LeBron, you know, and a lot of, and also the Golf Channel pre-Tiger. And because a lot of, you know, this is beyond biting the hand that feeds you. You're eating it. You're using it for toilet paper and any other thing else you can do for it.
Yeah.
And therein lies the difference because again, you know, When Bill Condon was doing his junk, it was just a Philly thing. When Dick Young was doing his stuff, it was just a New York thing. But see, now these guys and gals become prominent. See, here's the ultimate thing that I always stress this when I talk folks, and I try not to talk about Screamin' A that much, but I only use him for an effect. Without a doubt, Stephen A. was the David Aldridge of his era. He was must-read stuff when he was with the old Philly Inquirer. He clearly was the best NBA beat writer in the country. Not Peter Vesey, not any of these other folks from back. It was clearly Stephen A. Smith. His stuff was must-read stuff. But unfortunately, that's what winds up happening. And another guy who I let go, Dick Vitale, was the same way. If you read some of Dick Vitale's books early in his career at ESPN, they are some of the best nonfiction basketball books out there because but when he went from Dick Vitale to Dickie V and then it's like the old Eminem line, you lose yourself. And these guys and gals, it's happened to where they lose themselves and they stop being journalists, and they basically become personalities. And like I said, I would rather be called a Republican than to be called a personality. Because to me, it literally, to me, it's basically saying, you know, people want to see the thing now is to quote unquote have a take on something.
Yeah.
And in and of itself, having a take is not the problem. But to go back to what Mike said, when your take is from ignorance, and there's and you're just literally just spewing stuff because you've either made it personal or because you don't have the brains or the balls to go look up information. Because the thing is, what I always tell a lot of folks, these same journalists have the same access to the same internet as
yeah.
we all do.
Yeah.
You know? They can jump on YouTube and watch those old tapes of Wilt Chamberlain and watch those old tapes of folks from back in the day, but see, that would require some work. Now, I won't broad brush everyone. I do believe that there are a lot of folks that do their research. Now, I have to admit, I know myself, I sort of go after the youngins because, again, that I always, you know, I use that, you know, if it happened before September of 1979, it doesn't happen. They don't know. Or they're not aware of it. And see, there's a different kind of ignorance. If it's ignorance because you don't know, you might get a pass. But if it's ignorance and you don't go and do the work and you knowingly don't do the work, then
there you go.
Then all slapping procedures should begin right afterwards, as far as I'm concerned, because the information, you know, to coin an old phrase from the X-Files, the information's out there. Mm-hmm. And there really is no, there really, you really, this is it. If you are a real journalist, the one thing you should never say is, almost never say is, I don't know. Now, I've always said, you know, everybody, you know, I think most people here who are familiar with the show know my background. The one thing that I learned from my years at the Mouse was I may not know the exact question, but I can steer you toward where you can find the answer. And to me, that's the – see, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole, you know, the Latin meaning of media and whatever, but fundamentally, as journalists, we are the – sources of information. And if it's something we may not know, we should be able to steer someone to that. And at the end of the day, what I see a lot of from the youngins, and most importantly from folks our age or folks that are even older, is their ignorance. And that's, and to me, like I said, I may tolerate it a little bit with some of the youngins, make more so out of ignorance, but folks my age and older, you don't get a pass. You don't, because the information you can look up. You know, it's just as easy. You know, when we do our information to look up stuff and to verify stuff, it's the same internet, it's the same websites. It's the, you know. The information is there. Laziness is not, you know, laziness is not tolerated. Ignorance to the law is not, that's not going to fly.
Yeah. Final point,
if I may. I mean, none of us know everything with all our expertise, but the expertise that we do have is to go do the research.
And that's half. And you know what? That's half the thing right there, Art.
Oh, yes, man.
That's the thing, because it's, you know, it's one thing to say, you know again, when the Mouse does their, you know, top 10 all time, but see, they always qualify it in the quote unquote ESPN era, which to me is a cop out. But again, I'm not running the show, so whatever. But if you qualify, see, way too many times we get that GOAT argument. And I'm like,
if I hear another LeBron James, Michael Jordan, I'm gonna smack them for something.
And see,
cannot compare Michael Jordan to LeBron James. It is a different era.
No, people can't keep thinking about it.
I'm tired of this. You can't do it.
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. You can't do it. Let's put it this way. Are willing to do the entire research, it can be done. But see, what winds up happening is that you get half-assed. When you do a half-assed job, you get a half-assed result. Most of those Jordan James arguments are half-assed takes because folks are willing to just take a snippet of something to prove their overall points. Now, and plus, both sides, whether you're a LeBron guy or a Jordan guy, they make it personal because, see, my biggest argument has always been more so with the Jordan folks versus James, where they basically try to tell you that he's just a average player. That's beyond ignorance. He's not an average player. He's the all-time leading scorer, for Christ's sakes, gee whiz. You can't be an average player. And be the all-time leading scorer. If you want to try to bastardize it and say, oh, the three-pointers, Yeah, but see, again, you put it into perspective. You put it into perspective because It's beyond hating. It's beyond whatever. I mean, they were 2-10 and got to the Western Conference Finals. So you figure it out. But that being said, is that when they, and Mike, we always talk about how they try to dehumanize, black men overall and what have you. And see, therein lies the problem with a lot of these takes and analysis, is that they try to basically dehumanize their opponent. Now, look, I will come out and say, if I don't like a certain player, I will always try to make sure I say that first. But I will always say, now, I don't like them personally, but here's what they've done. What's the problem is, and this is on both sides, the James folks versus Jordan and the Jordan folks versus James, is that they try to make it out like these guys can't play. And that's beyond
they're gonna make Jokic and Superman
say this about Jokic. We still need more about there still needs to be more of a body of work.
If you had a West Coast and you're in the radio, and this guy is the walk on water. You know what I'm saying?
I'll say it again. You must make the mute button your friend.
Exactly. That's no joke. And if we got to go Jokic has earned the right to say he can play. Okay,
absolutely.
That's the best thing you can say about him. I haven't seen a European player play this well and with as much purpose since Jasmin Petrovic. So
also, Gary, this is also something that we've all, you know, look, the NBA has always pushed a white hope, no matter what. I mean, for all, you know, for all the great players in, whether it's a Bird, whether it's Nowitzki, whether it's, remember, the whole thing a few years ago was they were trying to tell you that basically all the European players were better than any of the American players. We all know that, and the thing about it is it just shows me they don't do their own research, because when you talk to those European players, when they ask, who do you pattern your game after? Every last one of them comes back to, I can't, you know, and again, I'm just speaking on whatever. I have yet to hear any of these great European stars say that they patterned their game after another European star, either before them or after them. Always comes back to an African-American NBA great. It always does. Dirk Nowitzki, Magic Johnson, all of them say they patterned their game after someone. I defy anyone to tell me of a European player, a prominent European player, who says he patterns his game after another European player, either current or that came before him. Gary, fuck the media, okay? How many times do I have to say this? This is the thing I challenge everybody, in a sense. Think of all the athletes over the years, black, white, or whatever, who have not had great relationships with the media. What I always say is, take what they say with a grain of salt. What do his contemporaries say?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as bad, you know, there's very few contemporary players that have gone after LeBron. Hell, there's probably more of them that have tried to make a reputation off of LeBron, much like the media folks have. You know, I mean, Mr. Brooks is a perfect example, and you know, he was shown of the phony that he is. But see, here's the thing. I will listen to other players, his contemporaries, more than I will listen to the media, because they see the body of work. They see, here's the thing that we forget at times. We don't see the entire body of work. We just see the reason. We just see the finished product. We don't see what they do during the off season. We don't see the kind of stuff that they have to go through off the court or what have you. That's why when I see a lot of these former players that literally go out of their way to embarrass and whatever these current guys, it's like, guys, they're for the grace of God. Because look, here's the thing. The very same stuff they're saying about James, they said about Shaq and Barkley and what have you. And I go after Barkley harder, because say what you and maybe it's a hollow argument, but say what you want. Yeah, LeBron's been to multiple finals. Charles, one trip to the finals, bruh. You're a great player, and I don't take that away from you. But
thank you.
You know, look at the, you know, look at literally, man in the mirror, guy. Man in the mirror.
I don't listen to John Barney because what he said about the Golden State Warriors pissed me off.
But see, again, you know, and again, I don't hold myself to a higher standard by saying this or whatever, but I know it just works for me. I was one of those folks that always did the pre, post, halftime shows or what have you. And as I got older, I was like, seeing anything.
Yep.
There's nothing profound coming out of these pre and post game shows.
Thank you.
A lot of them, and therein lies the rub. Watch the games. You know, you will look, and see, that's enough. You know, we could probably do another 2-hour show on that. I think the other problem now, and all of us have been somewhat guilty of it to a certain extent, nobody actually sits and watch games anymore. Everybody gets highlights. And look, I get it. I understand it. It's physically impossible to watch every game. I get that. I truly get that. That being said, it's sort of a lazy way of doing it if you're just going by the highlights. Now, in some instances, in some sports, you know, and the NHL probably does the best job of this, where you can sort of get a gauge on something if you watch the if you're watching a highlight of it's like about 20, 25, 30 minute thing. It's about as expensive as you can get. The NHL, along with TSN, they do great.
Yes, they do.
Review pieces of regular season and postseason games, and you can get a feel. That being said, you still have to watch the games. And it's funny, I have caught so many folks where I just basically, you know, I don't say anything nasty about their mama. I don't say anything about the clothes they wear. I literally say, did you watch the game? And then all of a sudden they turn it to Rob Cramden. Hamina, 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 hamina. How are you going to comment on something that you've never seen?
You read my mind, because the NHL really does do the best job. I was thinking about that as in a couple of hours the Stanley Cup Final is going to commence.
Go Vegas!
Of Las Vegas against the Florida Panthers. Two gold brothers. You got Keegan Colazon with 55 for the Golden Knights, and Anthony Duclair, number 10 for the Florida Panthers. I'm really rooting, much as I would have been Colazon, I'm really rooting for Duclair, because he got his the old-fashioned way. He earned it. Because
I'm rooting for Duclair, but I want Vegas to win. This is the reason why I want Vegas to win. Because of the, I've been in the league 6 years. I've been in the playoffs 3 or 6 years. So it gives other new teams and
say,
okay, we can do this.
No,
that's
sure.
Why I remember
Vegas. Clearly Vegas has picked up on a formula that if we do this, our team will be successful. And they've been that way. You know?
Yeah.
The fact that Florida is still here is a tribute to the sweat equity of Ron Bobrovsky and to Duclair, because when John Tortorella, that asshole, was made coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets, he told a press corps that Duclair couldn't play hockey. I mean, that's, you can say some guy ain't this or some guy ain't that. But he said straight up, he can't play. Now, at the time, Duclair played for the Ottawa Senators, and that night, Duclair scored a hat trick, including the game-winning goal. You know, ever since, Duclair has allowed his speed to be his bread and butter. He's been a consistent 30-goal scorer, and when he's going down the ice, I can hear the Panther fans go, dude. So they already know. This is somebody who's earned his spot. And I would love nothing more than for him to skate through the ice and skate on the ice with the cup. Kolesar, you're young, you're going to get yours. But I want Duclair to get it because he survived a media storm. And he survived the fact that a boss in Tortorella didn't like him and tried to trash him.
What weakness that Vegas has, I think Florida's going to exploit this. Vegas has a very weak penalty-killing team. Their
penalty-killing
team is
bad. Hell, it almost cost them a series with Dallas, to be quite honest.
Dallas,
the little stars. That's Vegas' Achilles heel, unfortunately. But Vegas is doing one thing right. They put together a team on the ice that whatever they do, they play of one mind. They're probably the most effective counterpunch team to be in the playoffs and in the league in years. And Seattle copied a lot of what Vegas does, and they got to the playoffs in 2 years.
And they knocked off the defending champs.
And on top of that, they knocked off the defending champs. But no honesty, defense wins championships. Bobrovsky was unconscious in that series.
And Goldie's can carry you to
by the way, as an aside, you mentioned Columbus. You see who they hired as their new head coach today?
No, who?
Mike Babcock.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. You guys recently got thrown. Yeah. I said this thing when I saw, like, wait a minute. Didn't Toronto basically, like, you know, tell him you ain't got to go home, but you got to get the hell out of here? And now he's going to Columbus?
That's what they did.
Oh, well. I guess he's gonna have to, you know, put his way. He's gonna have to get Dick Nixon's old media team so they can rewrite his image for the 150th different time. Now,
about that.
What the Toronto Maple Leafs? They don't get their act together this year.
But Gary, haven't we said that the last 3-4 years?
I know,
Well, see, I guess because they finally won a series that, like, that earned him a little or whatever. But now, I guess the thing with them is it Nylander and Matthews contracts are up?
Nylander and Matthews contracts are up. You got Tavares and Marner as part of their big four. So somebody is going to have to get cut loose. They didn't say who. But somebody
Mike, in the words of Henry Hawk, one of these things, and I said one of these
things. Yes, indeed.
To say the least.
Oh, man.
I got to add it to Jonathan Quick is going to be his daily come again.
Well, at least he's got a good seat to watch it from this time, because you know,
yeah.
he's probably still tired from 3 years ago. He's, you know.
No shit.
I think the sad thing is the only drawback. All the games are on TNT, because if you don't have cable, you're screwed.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right. That's right.
Gentlemen. I told you this years ago that the National Football League has put their playoff games on cable. I said, here we go. And looking into
But you know, Gary, I was thinking that too, but see, here's the thing. The more and more I thought about it, the Super Bowl is even too big of a cash cow move to a certain extent, they can't.
That's right. See, Tony, I agree with you, but no one needs greedy SOBs.
But Gary, even the greedy bastard factor here is pushing it. Because again, you got to remember Mike, when we did the pace scale from when the Chiefs lost the first Super Bowl to what last year's losers got.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
This way, only the World Cup. Is a bigger event than the Super Bowl. And here's the thing.
And the World Cup is broadcast all over the world too.
And that's my point. As big as the Super Bowl is now look, they can get away with it, you know, doing it domestically for if some guy from Bapu Tatswana has to watch the thing he's fucked. I hate to say it. He's fucked. He's gonna have to come up with a couple of extra bones or what have you to be able to watch the game live. And also, he's probably gonna have to get up 4 a.m. to watch it as well. But that's a whole other thing. But I don't. Because even as greedy little bastards the NFL is. Even they realize that we've gone, you know, they could do like, see, because mind you, it's just the one game for now that they're putting on Peacock for now. Now, granted, they can, and see, that's how, you know, the NFL up until a couple of years ago was still the one who said, all of our postseason games are on regular television. Well, they sold out a little bit to the mouse for one game, and now you know they're taking to Peacock. And see, now with this new deal with Google and YouTube, it's the highest bidder or what have you. But they realize that. They've got, you know, they basically have got a cow and a heifer and the heifer's mother in regards to the Super Bowl. And technically what the NHL is doing this year is that they're honoring that whole thing, because when they did the contract with both the mouse, ABC and TNT, the one stipulation, TNT, I mean Turner, I'm sorry, Turner basically said, you got to give us one of the finals one of these years. I mean, even if it's every other year. So,
right.
In a sense, they're like saying, okay, second year of the deal, we're going to give you the finals. Now, I don't know if in Vegas and in Florida they're going to be allowed to watch it on their local affiliate.
Think so.
Because see, the thing about
it
is both of them now the Panthers are on Bally's Florida. And I believe Vegas is on one of those AT&T networks. So, I don't know. Again, I don't know. I don't see a lot of these NHL teams. I don't know if they even have local regular My only guess is that maybe the local ABC station in either Florida and or Vegas is going to have the games on. Now, see, in Vegas, it might not be a factor anyway because, hell, if I can't get, if I don't have TNT, I'll just go to the casino and watch it.
That's right.
Florida,
I know there's casinos in Florida, but I don't know. And, you know, that's why sports bars were made too, of course, but that's a whole other thing. But let's put it this way. It is interesting that all the games are going to be on TNT. Like I said, it's more so of them living up to the contract, which I'm pretty sure the NHL is very, very happy with. I meant to check out Mr. Butthead's State of the Union thing earlier today.
But
okay.
And I reiterate, but do we see?
Hold on.
One more important question: will we see the Rats?
I think it's just a matter of when, not if.
Yes.
I think first way.
Vegas wins the first two games, I don't think you're gonna see Rats.
Well, put it this way. I'm pretty sure that there's some people in the Sunshine State that if they didn't have Rats before, they'll recruit the Rats that are in their building just to have them. on call for the for this. But no, you'll see them. Hey, remember when they got swept, a million years ago by Colorado when they lost that last game.
They still do all those.
Well, damn it! I brought these Rats. I'm using them. So they just basically said, well, yeah. I think it's no doubt we're gonna see them. It's just a matter
Let
of
the rats
are they,
fly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's a matter
but
of
they made a rat rule.
Well, put it this way. I don't think they'll throw them out in mass like they did before because we saw because after when they knocked the Canes off the other night,
yeah.
There was a couple of them out there. They threw a couple of them out there after Kachuk scored that goal. A couple. I mean, like I said, you put it this way. You won't put it this way. You're not going to see
a rat.
Put it this way. You're not going to see a remake of Willard or Ben. but I get the feeling we will see. We'll see a few. I guess it's just a matter of what they're able to do after the first two games. And remember, didn't they win the first? Didn't they win in all of their series? Didn't they win the first game on the road in all of their series?
I think they did. If somehow Florida goes up 3-0, the Rats will rain down.
So tonight's huge because if they're able to steal game one, think about it. you could have a, even though I, you know, even though I think folks are ready to say, even though folks are a little being a little premature in regards to the Heat, you could have, you know, you could very easily have two parades in Florida this year.
Oh yeah, and gotta give it to
Bobrovsky because you have a governor and a complete jerky.
That's another 2 hour conversation in another show.
Put it this way,
Mike, if you're looking for King Rat in Florida, you won't have to go that much farther than the governor's mansion, I guess.
Yeah, but Bobrovsky has come a long way. I remember when the Flyers had him.
Yeah,
I guess he wasn't ready for prime time.
Gary, you know the Flyers can't have nice things. Come on, now.
You know shit.
Okay, guys. Rabbit, is your drink out of here.
Sure.
You got any last words?
Which one of us?
Tony.
I still say the Heat in six. I'll stand by that.
I still
say the Heat in six. I still jet lag or whatever. I still think that Miami can win this series. And NHL, I don't know really who to pick. I kind of would like to see Mr. Duclair get his, but you know what? Can't lose either way because at least a brother's name is gonna go in the cup no matter what happens this year. So
that's right.
It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I will
take your Heat in six and raise you Panthers in six. I really want Anthony Duclair to get the last word on this. You know. Joe Ward said years ago, hockey is for everyone. And Anthony Duclair may not have come out of Haiti with the best skill set. But he obviously loved the game, and the game loves him back. And I'm more than anybody else would be screaming, do if he managed to put one in there tonight. So, good Panthers.
Yeah. If nothing else, this is going to be a fun series to watch because, I mean, again, if someone had told you at the beginning of the year, it's Vegas and Florida, you might have said, what size jacket do you wear, son?
Yes, sir.
Remember, was it last year that Florida had the best record in the
East? Yes, they did.
And we all know how important the President's Cup is. I think the President's Cup ain't got nothing on, the SI Jinx ain't got nothing on the President's Cup because
about that.
Man,
Bruins lost to number 8, right?
This is the first time one city has lost to the eighth seed in two different playoff modes. Couldn't happen to a nicer city.
I was like Disney.
Love that. And I'm not, with the Bruins, it's like, but to see the Celtics lose at home, and I mean, put it this way, like I said it before and I'll say it again. The only time Celtic fans aren't whining is when their mouth shuts.
Yep. It's quiet now, boy.
Yep.
All right,
even,
thank you,
Famous Flames.
Yeah.
Take care, guys.
Put your bad stuff. Say it louder. Say it louder. For real. Some people say we got a lot of malice. Some say it's a lot of nerve. I say we want to quit moving. Because we get what we deserve. Take you eyes to make a pair. Brother, we can't quit until we get our share.
Lead, but there is a green over the back. 8 o'clock in the morning on the East, the Spanish Grand Prix. Tomorrow morning, the Spanish Grand Prix. No, there you go. Hope you enjoyed the show. We're overtime. I'll take you guys out next week. Same bad time. Same bad day. And tomorrow we're going to do a James Brown.